All right. It's about 3 minutes after 11. You're listening to this week's news from the Drug War Front. Just before we go to a song while I wait my collaborator to return from having a cigarette, I'd just like to mention that people that enjoy listening to our show or any of the other 60-plus original shows produced every week by volunteers at 2XX to seriously considering supporting People Powered Radio 98.3 FM. 2XX, to my mind, is a very important community asset. Our show has been on air, I believe, closer to 20 years after speaking to somebody who said they're involved in the initial days of this program way back when. So getting on for close to two decades, 2XX has been able to provide a voice for News from the Drug War Front. So it's a very, very important asset for the community and for issues and communities that are, well, not able to access mainstream media. So seriously consider becoming a member. It's a very important way of keeping 2XX on the air. It doesn't receive much in the way of government financial support. It does get some, but most of the work done is done by volunteers, and considering that the quality and range of programming is quite incredible. Anyway, Marion has picked this song. It's one of her CDs. It's The Black Sorrows. The album's The Chosen One, and the song is Harley and Rose. All right, that was Harley and Rose.
That was The Black Sorrows.
Black Sorrows, yeah. Your CD, Matt.
My CD, darling. Haven't heard that one. Thank you for that. I haven't heard Harley and Rose for yonks, and I actually didn't, but I tried to play it on my CD player yesterday and it just wouldn't. So I thank you for playing that for me. Anyway, we were going to go on to It Saves Lives. This is a report on the government stands firm on the location of Richmond Injecting Room by Rachel Eddy of The Age, March the 25th. The acting Premier, James Molino, has stood by the decision to run a safe injecting room next to a primary school in Richmond after emotional parents addressed a residents' meeting on Wednesday night. More than 100 residents met at the All Nations Hotel opposite the facility in Melbourne's Inner East, urging the state government to move the injecting room away from Richmond West Primary School. Mr. Molino said on Thursday the facility saved lives and was supported by the school community. I would imagine that it's instead of having needles and syringes and people injecting outside the school, it's better that they have a location that is behind closed doors so that people aren't out in front of the kids or dropping in the laneways at the back of Richmond.
Yeah.
So I understand both points of view, unfortunately, Jeffrey. I see what they're saying, but you know, if you think about it, next to a school, well, would they be injecting next to the school? Probably.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be there, would it?
Look, it probably would have been better if they were able to find a location
if
a
there
little
was
bit further
out,
away.
But I think they had problems with that anyway,
I think
didn't
they did,
they?
Yeah.
Okay. A review of the two-year trial last year estimated between 21 and 27 lives were saved in the first 18 months. In 2020, the government extended the trial for another 3 years and appointed former Victorian Police Chief Commissioner Ken Lay to lead consultations over the establishment of a second injecting facility. However, the facility continues to divide residents and school parents, many of whom want the injecting room moved from its current location next to the primary school. A body was discovered outside the school and a man was arrested after allegedly trespassing on school grounds, armed with a knife, in separate incidents last week. Parent Josie Carberry said the events of the past 2 weeks had left parents horrified but not surprised. Josie Carberry said, "My kid, like other kids, has seen things no kids should see," she told the meeting on Wednesday. But I think Josie Carberry needs to know that, you know, the kids probably would see that maybe even more often without that injecting facility.
Well, the evidence from King's Cross has been...
Yeah, has been good. No, I think you're absolutely right, Geoffrey, that the evidence from King's Cross is that the longer it's there, the more inside things are, you know, the more tucked away that injectors are, and the safer they are.
Well, no fatalities in itself speaks volumes.
Absolutely, and people actually stay in the facility long enough to get over their initial intoxication so that they're not likely to drop outside the facility.
Well, for some people, it's the only point of interaction with any service of any kind.
At all, absolutely. So, the only thing they want is something, and that's a great point for the... you know, as a reason for having one in the ACT, Geoffrey, is how many people do we not have contact with because we don't provide an injecting facility? I mean, if we had a look at all the data through from all of the alcohol and drug services, say the Needle Exchange Program and KARMA and the Hepatitis C Council, which can count as an alcohol and drug facility as well, the detox facilities, and then ones in rural New South Wales, which also incorporate a lot of ACT residents or take them in, we probably find that we're talking about a large number of people who don't come in, who are still, well, they go to Needle and Syringe Exchange Program, but they don't inject safely nonetheless, even though they don't share needles and syringes, they still are having things like abscesses because they don't know how to inject safely. They're new recruits to injecting, or they've been injecting in one vein for such a long time that they have, you know, scars on that vein and they can't find another one. It's a problem, you know, it's fraught with difficulties.
That's a good point, Erin.
Yeah, so there are plenty of reasons to actually have an injecting facility that I go above and beyond just what we need most of all.
Yeah.
What the government is prepared to provide is something we have to consider really seriously too. Yeah.
So is this having this set up mean no money for anything else, or is it?
Well, that's a problem, isn't it? If we have to think about it in that way, but I would think that if what we had was a population of people that weren't seen anywhere else, what we might find is that we had a safe injecting room as well as other facilities, because the need for other things is being highlighted by people using the injecting facility.
Yeah.
No one, I didn't think anyone would use a needle exchange program, Geoffrey, either.
Oh.
Right? I thought that maybe they should sell needles and syringes through pharmacies instead of just taking them off the shelves, which is what they'd done before we had to have safe injecting through non-needle sharing because of HIV.
Yep.
I said, no, we don't need a needle exchange program. Well, we did. And it's a massive
success.
Internationally regarded, well-known, well-regarded.
And successful.
And successful in that it's reduced certainly HIV transmission, and it's encouraged people to come in contact with services that we wouldn't maybe never have seen.
And it's saved the taxpayer money, which for
absolutely,
a lot of people...
Absolutely, because people, you know, someone with HIV is going to cost a hell of a lot more health dollars than needle and syringe exchange program.
Yeah, it ticked all the boxes.
One person with HIV is, what, 150,000, 200,000 in medication alone?
Well, there's no cure. It's just
it's a maintenance,
drugs to maintain not getting so sick that you die. Really.
That's right.
It's not like you're cured, like the Hep C direct acting antivirals, which is why they're so fantastic.
Yeah.
It's not just treating the symptoms of Hep C, it's curing people.
It has been certainly, and though there are some people for whom it doesn't cure. Apparently, I came into contact with somebody who I thought had been, because of been using, you know, the antiretrovirals, had been cured of his HIV because he actually progressed to AIDS.
And cured of his Hep C?
No, HIV.
From taking?
From, because they use antiretrovirals too, right, but combination therapies.
And what, there was no virus detected? Or?
No, he's still HIV positive and he's still got quite a, I think it's a high white cell count, but I didn't actually go into it, but I know that they haven't cured HIV.
No.
They haven't found a cure for HIV, and whereas they've had some success with the antiretrovirals and the multi-drug therapies.
Oh, the combination therapies are way better than they used to be.
Yeah, but
way
they still better. Haven't
it's not
found
curing
a cure.
People. No,
So we still have problems with
you're
that.
Living with HIV. Still.
That's right, yeah.
All right, just continuing on with this piece about the government standing firm in Victoria on the
Richmond
injecting room. Acting Premier, Mr. James Merlino, said that as Education Minister, he was constantly engaging with the school principal, and the advice that he received was that the number of syringes found in the area and incidents at the school had in fact decreased.
No.
And he's quoted as saying, "It's a great school. Enrolments have grown, and I know this is challenging. I know it's confronting, but it's been the reality in North Richmond for decades." End quote. Frustrated parents are holding crisis talks tonight, that was 25th of March, over the Richmond Safe Injecting Centre. Families have revealed children are seeking counselling to deal with traumatic scenes spilling onto their school grounds. Mr. Molino said the location was selected because of the concentration of drug activity in the area. No government MP attended the residents' meeting on Wednesday night. Instead, Mr. Molino attended the state memorial service for music legend Michael Gudinski, founder of the Mushroom Group, as did the Health Minister Martin Foley. Opposition leader Michael O'Brien said the government had grown arrogant and dismissive of the concerns of residents and that his party would run a candidate in the seat of Richmond at the next election to campaign on this issue. Quote, not one of them had the courage to turn up to the public meeting, he said, adding that the facility should be moved to a commercial area away from homes and the school. When you get a government that's given up on listening, you've got a government that's given up its right to reform. Gee, that's a big statement.
It is.
Careless doesn't put it strongly enough. I just think they don't care. They really don't care. I've met residents who live in and around the injecting facility and I've seen the pain in their eyes.
Oh, boy, pull a heartstring.
That's really, going for the...
Yeah, I wonder, you have to look at the pain in the drug users' eyes and change the laws and then they won't need a drug injecting facility next to your school, Sonny Jim.
Well, it's funny how we never go beyond...
Yeah, it's always the pain the symptoms, in the parents the, yeah. of the school kids' eyes, you know, or but they don't think about women having their children ripped off them because they are discriminated against because they are injecting drug users and... You know, how many women would actually go to that injecting facility and talk about their kids because of the mandatory notification laws. So any health service provider has to notify if there is a child at risk. All you need is one parent who sees a woman with a child one day and going to an injecting facility another day, and if she knows where that injector lives, can dob her into community services.
And that
and
can
she
lead
loses
to,
her child.
Yeah, all sorts
because
of...
Because she's a drug user.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
No, look, the negative consequences of the war on people who use drugs are so broad and...
And much bigger than the negative consequences of the location of an injecting facility. I understand that some people are not going to change their mind, and if they want it to be a vehicle for a campaign on promoting a Liberal Party member in that region, so be it.
Yeah.
Let it be that. But, you know, they don't need to pretend that they have an issue or that the issue hasn't changed in some way when, in fact, it has.
Mm.
I think these people would be arguing that black was white no matter what the Deputy Premier said anyway.
You're always going to get naysayers. It's good to hear the Victorian government is...
Is standing up for it, for the facility itself, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important. Look, I thought I might go to a more upbeat song, Maz. I thought I'd play Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, the Enduri classic.
Well, this I haven't is from, heard that for a while.
Reasons to be Cheerful, the best of the Enduri.
That's for you, Jeffrey.
Oh, that was a bit of fun, Maz.
Yeah, haven't heard that for ages, Jeffrey. Did that perk you up a little bit?
It did perk me up,
yeah. That's good. Bit of I'm pleased to hear it.
Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. Okay, it's about 20, coming up to 24 minutes after 11.
Indeed,
you're with Jeff and Marion in the 2XX studio, 98.3 FM, People
News,
Powered Radio.
That's right. And
news from the Drug War Front.
Yeah, news from the Drug War Front. Join People, join 2XX, join People Powered Radio. I'd just like to say this at least once during the show, which we have half an hour. Although news from the Drug War Front is, the only show of its kind in Australia. People Powered Radio, like 2XX, is really important, and we just exhort listeners to join, subscribe to 2XX because you support our voice and you can actually get an opportunity to present your own point of view just by being a member of 2XX, and you're supporting an important resource for the community.
Absolutely right.
So just by virtue of donating a bit of money or joining 2XX, you are making sure that the radio station stays here and stays functional and keeps up to date with the wonderful equipment they've got and the staff they've got that help us every week because we forget, some of us, forget how to do things or forget what to do.
And that's a good thing to
very
say,
very useful, very supportive of us.
Yeah, we've had wonderful support from 2XX.
We always have. Join 2XX, it's well worth it.
Absolutely. All right, we'll get on to an international story. Anyone who's seen the news in the last week will be aware of the military coup in Myanmar, also known used to be known as Burma.
Yeah, and didn't used to kill their citizens at quite the rate that it does these days.
It's getting worse and worse, Marion, isn't it?
You know, just because they weren't happy with the outcome of the... I wonder if that will happen in Russia if Putin doesn't like, if the guy that they've sent to jail actually wins and becomes president next time they have an election, although he's president for life, is he now, Putin? Oh,
it seems that way, doesn't it? I mean, unfortunately, authoritarianism seems to be on the ascendancy.
Look, this Mr. Popularity, you know, electing Mr. Popularity instead of Mr. Got a Brain on His Head or Miss Got a Brain on Her Head.
It's just a worry.
It's in the...
All right, this piece is from Agence France-Presse, which is a French media conglomerate. Thailand faces crystal methamphetamine trafficking surge after the coup in Myanmar by Lisa Martin. A village watchman trains his binoculars on a suspicious fishing boat, the first line of defence as Thailand braces for a fresh methamphetamine influx after a military coup in neighbouring Myanmar. The kingdom's narcotics bureau has already seized more than 80 million yaba pills just in the past 6 months, a record haul partly blamed on a supply glut caused by the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah, probably haven't been able to get them past past all the countries.
Exporting and. But now the United Nations warns of an even bigger deluge as Myanmar's local economy tanks following weeks of nationwide unrest and strike action.
The legal economy, I think it means, yeah.
Well, the trouble is in Myanmar,
yes.
Most of the economy seems to be run or owned or
by the military.
So following nationwide unrest and strike action following the military takeover. Quote, if past actions are an indicator of what's to come, then we're likely to see another increase in synthetic drug production, said Jeremy Douglas of the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, or UNODC. He told Agence France-Presse that organised crime groups and allied militias across the border were likely to continue working to strengthen their positions whilst Myanmar was in turmoil. Mm. Quote, the best way to make the big money fast in the drug trade and the pieces are in place to scale up, Douglas said. Synthetic drug production is already the number one revenue source for several insurgent groups and militias in lawless pockets of Myanmar, close to the borders of Thailand and Laos. The frontier traversing the three countries makes up what's known as the Golden Triangle that has for decades been the hub of Southeast Asia's lucrative drug trade. The recent supply glut has kept the street value of a crystal meth pill in Bangkok at rock bottom prices at 50 baht or about $1.66 per pill.
Mm. Methamphetamine's more potent crystallised form normally gets sent on to wealthier overseas markets such as Australia and Japan, although pandemic transport bottlenecks have disrupted that trade. Heavier patrols along the Myanmar border have not deterred traffickers, with Thai authorities estimating that around 3/4 of illegal drugs entering their territory are now routed through Laos. The battle against the meth trade between the two countries, divided by the Mekong River, is hampered by a lack of manpower and equipment such as night vision gear, motion sensors and motorbikes. The provincial naval unit in charge of monitoring the border has also been forced to increase land patrols because drought and Chinese-funded dams upstream have caused water levels to drop so they can get across the river easier. So a lot of the immigrants have been doing that too, Jeffrey. Authorities have in recent months been using dedicated village volunteer groups living along the river to provide around-the-clock surveillance of the border. Their local knowledge is helping spot drug runners trying to blend in with ordinary fishermen on the Mekong. A quote from Rashin Sinfo, 58, who heads up a volunteer group at the village in Nong Khai province, says, "We also always spot the boats with the fake fishermen. They won't come to the riverbank. If there are many fishermen out, they won't go close to them and will stay away." Dragonflies buzzed overhead as Rashin points out a shed on the Laos side of the Mekong River that is reported to be storing a ton of yaba tablets. He says his team is busiest in the first hours before dark and the last before dawn. Drug traffickers time their movements with changeovers in the local police force shifts. The volunteers do not make arrests because they are unarmed and some drug smugglers have guns. But they do tip off policemen to the movements of traffickers, as was the case during the last big arrest at a neighbouring village. The quote from Rashin was, "The drug runners carried the packages from their boats and hid the drugs in the grass and trees on the riverbank. They sent a car to spot the collect the drugs. Just as the car was leaving, the police came and arrested them and found 5 million yaba tablets."
Whoa.
Duong Ninket, who runs an accommodation business in the village, says she feels safer knowing Roisin's team are keeping watch. But the 54-year-old still worries about meth taking hold in her community. "I'm afraid if they start selling drugs in my village, it will affect the youth and they will become addicts," she told AFP.
The other thing to keep in mind, Marion, is Yarba is often used by people to work very long hours.
Absolutely.
So they can feed their families.
Well, indeed. I mean, that's, you know, we've said that often, that I've said it often, that the Air Force in particular, when they used to fly to in World War II from Australia to Malaya, had to, I mean, they were fed amphetamines or methamphetamine by the government to keep them in the air, because it took them 8 hours at least
to get to the bombing location
before they even started bombing.
Yeah.
And then they would have to fly back again, always assuming they didn't get shot down. But they were generally dealing with pilots that had an amphetamine dependency of one sort or another.
I think there's many a long experience of military.
It's called horses for courses, Geoffrey. You know, people use their drugs for what they get out of them.
Yeah.
And if you're working a night shift and not being able to sleep during the day, you are going to use amphetamines or methamphetamines to stay awake, as well as using them for recreationally. But, you know, that's often people use it for what they get out of it in the first place. Not just that it's available, but that they need it to do for some particular reason.
Yep. And unfortunately, as this article says, the Golden Triangle has long been a hub. I mean, back in the early days
Absolutely.
Of the heroin in Australia, it was all sourced, well, pretty much from the Golden Triangle.
Well, yes, and you know, the availability of opiates is no longer as widely sourced as it used to be in that area of the Golden Triangle. So methamphetamine is now what is available, because they can't get it out of Afghanistan. It's going more over towards Europe.
Yeah.
Because to take it to the east would be foolish. There's no market there. They were only using it as a staging post to get to the United States or to get to Australia.
Yeah. So, now, I remember the first book I ever read on the subject that piqued my interest in the politics of the drug trade was written by an American historian, Alfred W. McCoy. It was called Politics of Heroin in Southeast Asia. And it examined the history of, you know, America's military involvement in the region and GIs taking their habits back to the United States.
Yeah. And how many of them didn't go straight home when they got back to the States after they'd been in Vietnam,
It's a fascinating book, and he's done a more recent one, I guess, to cover the, you know, the more recent
what's
times.
Happened but, since then,
But it's not like anything's gone away or...
No. It's just, it may have changed the focus. They may have changed the drugs. Same things, different, you know, same people, same kinds of people, just different drugs, that's all. And they're just used to source different wars or to provide, you know, weapons for different wars. But basically that's what they're getting. They're getting drugs for guns.
For how many insurgent groups is selling drugs the way they pay for their weapons?
And that's been the case since at least the six... Well, since the introduction of these international... You know,
UN convention
on drugs and crime. It's just, it's ludicrous. It just, you know, highlights the amount of money and the that you can make out of illicit substances like opiates and methamphetamine or amphetamines and, you know, party drugs as well. It doesn't matter. Any kind of drug can be used. People will use it because it's what it gives them what they want. Basically, even if it's only access to the so-called romance of the illicit drug scene. People use drugs for what they get out of them.
No, there are vast profits to be made. And
Way too many.
Prohibition is going to, as long as it continues, that's what we're going to be dealing with.
That's right. And then when they get somebody who does make it legally available, they call them a narco, you know, narco dictator or narco state, and you just think, well, you know, you can't really win, can you?
I thought I'd play another beautiful song, Maz. This is Lou Reed's Perfect Day.
That'd be nice.
It's one of his most beautiful songs, I think. Lou Reed. Lou Reed and Perfect Day, that is a beautiful song, isn't it, Maz?
It is a beautiful song. Look, I've got a piece that got out of the Sydney Morning Herald that I actually saw on the ABC News this morning. Just interesting because it is local, well, in that it's in Sydney, This is a racehorse owner, Damien Flower, has pleaded guilty to two charges for his role in the syndicate smuggling commercial quantities, in a syndicate smuggling commercial quantities of cocaine through Sydney Airport. Flower, the 48-year-old part owner of Champion Stallion Schnitzel, was arrested in May 2019 with Qantas baggage handler Tooro or John Mafiti for importing cocaine from South Africa, which is interesting, hidden in the holds of commercial flights. Flower had maintained his innocence until, just as his trial was due to begin, the matter was resolved with prosecutors, and he pleaded guilty to one count of importing a commercial quantity of prohibited drugs and one count of dealing with proceeds of crime. A prominent racing identity who worked as a baggage handler between 2000 and 2004 had previously faced three counts of importing a commercial quantity. So that's three times 25 years, I think, Jeffrey, if they found him guilty on all three of them, or if he pled guilty, he could get up to 25 years on each of those charges. And two counts of dealing with the proceeds of crime. Arraigned in the Downing Street District Court on Monday wearing a black suit and tie, which is really important, of course, Flower entered a guilty plea on the charge of importing commercial... I hope he looked pretty. A charge of importing commercial quantities of cocaine between June 2016 and May 2019. He also entered a guilty plea on one count of dealing with the proceeds of crime equal to or greater than $100,000 in May of that year in Moorebank, where the Flower family lived. The charges are related to 12 shipments of cocaine, which is unbelievable that he's only got two counts of dealing in commercial quantity, and yet they're relating to shipments of cocaine that brought about 225 kilograms of illicit drug into Sydney between 2014 and 2017, was it? 2016 and 2019. The court heard on Monday that Flower, who'd been in custody since his arrest, had signed an agreed set of facts in regard to his offending. Police had alleged Flower and Mafiti communicated by mobile phone and used racing and football terminology as code for details about cocaine shipments. Since his arrest, Flower had been hit with an unexplained wealth order and many of his assets, including vehicles, real estate across the country and shares in horses, have been seized by authorities. Mafiti has already pleaded guilty over his role in importing the cocaine over 3 years and dealing with the proceeds of crime. Flower and Mafiti will be sentenced together in September, which is interesting. I wonder what kind of outcome that will present, Jeffrey. What kind of conviction they will get. Well, sorry, so what, you know, how they will be.
How it will turn out. I wonder what our asset forfeiture laws are, because some American states, it's, you know, being charged is enough. It's a reverse onus of proof. You have to prove that the car or
is
the house.
Is that not the same in Australia?
I'm not 100% sure whether it's, because it's state by state law, I would imagine.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I'll have to look into that.
It's interesting, but it sounds like they've already forfeited, or he's already forfeited the so-called proceeds of crime, equal or greater to $100,000. But I wonder if that also means that anything related to the racing is forfeited as well, because if he's been successful racing personality or, you know, trainer, then he should have been entitled to a certain amount of income from that too.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But perhaps not as much as he purports it to be.
We've got a couple of international stories that are probably too long to do justice, but one of them actually refers to a high-profile arrest of a guy called Tse Chi Lop.
Yes, but we did refer to it a couple of weeks ago. In fact, about a month ago, we talked about this guy.
I think we did, yes.
Yeah. And we did, but we didn't see quite as much in the detail as there is in the article that you have here, Jeffrey. So you're going to put that on the website, did you think?
I think definitely put a link to the Facebook page and the website, because it actually gives some... it actually was based on a warrant issued by the Australian Federal Police. So it's got a link to
and
Australia.
And it gives a little bit of what it looks like from our perspective, but also...
Read the first two paragraphs, give people a flavour of the story, because page 11?
Yep, let's do that then. Okay, so a Bureau of Customs agent. So recent Sam Gore arrests in Europe reveal the transcontinental reach of the drug syndicate. A Bureau of Customs agent reveals a package of illegal ecstasy tablet during a formal turnover to the Philippine Drug Enforcement Agency. That's Friday, February 22nd, 2019, in a suburban Pasay City. A package from the Netherlands containing 1,269 ecstasy tablets valued at $40,000 was seized by airport customs agents. Amid growing fears that the Netherlands is becoming a narco state, the unexpected arrest of alleged Chinese synthetic drug kingpin and most wanted international fugitive, Tse Chi Lop, in Amsterdam in January, has crowned an amphetamine paste year for Dutch drug enforcement. After dismantling a record 32 methamphetamine labs last year, according to the Dutch National Police's 2020 Synthetics Drugs Overview, Dutch narcs saw the reputed El Chapo of Asia mosey right into their clutches. Tse, or Tse, a 57-year-old Canadian citizen and the presumed dragon head of the Sam Gore super syndicate, an alliance of five Chinese triads that dominate Asia's $70 billion annual meth market.
$70 billion.
Was detained while on layover in Schiphol Airport. The alleged kingpin was nabbed on an Interpol red diffusion warrant at the request of the Australian Federal Police. The AFP issued a warrant for Tse in 2019 related to a 2013 drug case that dismantled a global crime syndicate operating in five countries, according to a press release it issued on the day of his arrest. That's the interesting thing about all that, Jeffrey, really, is that I don't know about you, but really there doesn't seem to me like there's been much of a gap in the market because of these monumental arrests and the busting of these people.
How many times do we see photographs of huge shipments and police standing there with smiles on their faces saying...
Look what we've done, haven't we been wonderful, and look at the amount of money and drug... And really what they're doing is encouraging, say, wow, look at the amount of money they've got there and look at the number of $100 bills they've got there that are no longer on the market. Right?
Well, it very rarely puts a huge hole in
it,
the...
It doesn't. And, you know, there are five families...
Yep.
So four outlets.
Probably got time to maybe do a little bit more of that story.
Okay,
now,
go for it.
Despite being a major target, despite being a major target for international law enforcement, Tse had managed to stay one step ahead of his pursuers by bribing senior officials from several Asian countries. And this is the other thing: when you've got a $70 billion industry, you've got a lot of spare cash to pay bribes. One such official was allegedly Meng Hongwei, a Chinese national and the former president of Interpol.
That's
a serious bribe.
Nothing like bribing up high, is it?
This is according to a former Royal Canadian Mounted Police investigator who requested anonymity. When asked for comment, Interpol did not confirm nor deny the allegations. Meng, quote, disappeared while travelling to China in 2018. Last year, the ex-Interpol chief was sentenced to 13 and a half years imprisonment for corruption after pleading guilty to accepting $2 million in bribes.
Wow.
Between 2005 and 2017. But Beijing never publicly revealed Meng's corruptors. Neither the Australian Federal Police, Interpol, nor other police agencies confirmed Tse's links to the synthetic drug trade in the Netherlands or Central and Eastern Europe. But Tse was named as a person of interest in a 2019 Polish drug trafficking probe linked to the Macau triads. I mean, this is transnational, Marion.
Yeah,
this is
absolutely.
All countries, all... It goes on to say, Vietnamese gangs are also heavily involved in crystal meth production and trafficking throughout Central Europe. The link is significant because the Sam Gore Syndicate also counts numerous Vietnamese traffickers as members, including the primary figure in the 2013 Australian drug case that ultimately led to Tse's arrest.
Mm.
According to a 2011 European Parliament report on Asian organised crime, the continent's Vietnamese gangs began, quote, as subdivisions of Chinese criminal organisations. Concurrently, the takedown of mobile encrypted network Sky ECC by Dutch and Belgian police earlier this month revealed evidence of transnational conspiracies to traffic and distribute heroin, crystal meth and cocaine throughout Australia, Asia, Europe, the United States and Canada. So that's a global enterprise.
That's about as global as you can get, really, isn't it?
Look, I will post the link to this because it's well worth reading. And it goes on to talk about European threads. It talks about
the
14K network in the Netherlands.
In the Netherlands, the PICO capital. It goes on and on. So, yeah, it's well worth, and about Vietnam.
Vietnamese mafias. Yep. I mean, anyone who thinks that this is not a huge global
issue and financially very viable as a as an income source. I mean, if you can afford to bribe a chief of Interpol with $2 million over
a decade or so
of operations, then you've got a bit of loose cash, plenty of money, a bit of cash.
I mean, and the sad thing is, this is going to continue to.
That's right. It's not going to get any better. That's just going to, the price is going to get higher.
Yep.
They're going to get cagier about their operations. They're going to be sticking more money into more people's pockets from more people's hands. And who's going to be punished for it? We are. People on the ground. It's just,
Well, we're missing out on taxes that aren't paid.
They don't make it legally available. We're looking at it, missing out on income that we could be generating for our health service.
Yeah.
You think about how much people applaud the NHS in Great Britain and how they're prepared to provide money to it. Well, if our health service was provided as many services as Britain's did, then we would be able to generate income from drug sales for just that purpose.
Yeah, look, I just think there's so many
good
logical
things
reasons
could come out of it.
That could come out of it. But it's going to take a lot of overcoming 6 decades of prohibition.
Propaganda.
And vested interests who benefit from
absolutely
the status quo.
Well, as much money as there in the black market, that's how much money you're going to have to overcome. To the people you're going to have to get past, get them out of your way and say, we want to make this legal. I bet you we can make a mess of that.
I don't think anyone can accurately quantify the amounts.
I don't think they can either.
Of money,
I think it's impossible.
You get a little insight here and there in cases like this.
Well, like stories like this.
Like that one. But anyway, look, we'll put the link to that on the Facebook page and also on the Karma website. And I guess we'll just conclude that if anyone is available at 2 o'clock today.
For the
Naloxone workshop.
Naloxone workshop at the
Early Morning Centre.
Early Morning Centre at 69 Northbourne Avenue. Then why don't you
Have you got
ring?
The phone number there, Maz?
Oh, I did have it here, Geoffrey, and I wrote it down somewhere. And here it is, I think. No, I didn't. I've left
anyway,
it on
look,
the page.
Look, look up Early Morning Centre if you're interested in doing it.
That's a point.
It's an excellent workshop. I've done it. The workshop you've done several
times.
There
we go, 6247 5041. So ring that number and ask them if you can register for the workshop. And if you can't register for this one, then you can get on for the next
future
one.
Future ones, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the Early Morning Centre's number, 6247 5041. And ask to speak to Nicole or one of the workers there, and they will tell you if you can register
for
this
spot
afternoon
for today
or not.
I'm sure,
for subsequent workshops.
I'm sure she'll set you straight pretty quickly. But look, you'll come away with the
means to bring somebody back from overdose and how to basically you'll know how to use naloxone the way it's meant to be used. It only does one thing, and that is it brings people back from overdose, but it does it really well. You'll come away with $30 as well, plus two vials or two nasal sprays or two doses of naloxone, and also the knowledge on how to use naloxone and how to use recovery services, how to do rescue breathing, but also how to do heart massage.
And what powerful information to have.
Absolutely.
To be able to
really
save a friend or even a stranger's
life.
It doesn't really matter who it is, does it?
It doesn't, no, not these
days. You've got the capacity to do it. So it's something that Karma is rightfully very proud of, and those workshops, we make it our purpose to keep people informed.
We always maintain that anything that Karma does, well, I mean, apart from the fact that Karma's our sponsor, we, we're happy to promote those, but the workshops in particular are really handy. I think that everybody should know how to use naloxone, whether you know a drug user or you don't. Your ability to use naloxone and bring somebody back from overdose particularly with opiates. That's all it does is reverse the effect of opiates, of opiate overdose. But I think everybody should know how to do that. So whether you know an opiate user or you don't know an opiate user, you should know how to use naloxone because it's a handy skill to have. And you meet the most interesting people at those workshops too. It's probably time that everybody did one of those workshops.
Absolutely. No, I can only endorse what you say about that program, Marion. And it's saved dozens, if not hundreds, of lives in the time that it's been in operation, and it's something Karma...
I might just mention, Jeffrey, too, that I was watching Viceland last night. That's a really interesting television station, but there's Hamilton's Pharmacopoeia, or Pharmacopoeia, as the American woman says, was on last night, and he was doing a bit on sable seeds, which are the seeds that come from a tree in, I think, Argentina, which are hallucinogens. It's the only reason I mention that because it's important to realise that not only are there illicit drugs, but there are legal drugs around, and we have them in Australia too. They're grown quite freely out in the bush. They grow naturally. Most countries got their own shaman-like or doctors that use natural therapies that they have had available to them for centuries. And Hamilton's Pharmacopoeia is just a series that is based around this guy, Hamilton, who goes from country to country and finds the local drugs that they use that he has read about or has heard of and wants to find out about how they're used and try them out and see if he could talk one of the shamans into teaching him how to use them the way they're meant to be used.
Sounds fascinating.
Well, it is pretty interesting to watch it and watch him take the drugs and see what happens.
Oh, so he's prepared to actually experiment on himself.
Oh, he's prepared to jump into them, yeah, but it's interesting how cagey he has to be to get the locals to get him to introduce him to the shaman.
Because they're wary of an outsider.
Because they're a bit dodgy about it because they think he's a young guy, just wants to get stoned. But he actually does want to find out how they're used. And it's really interesting to see that that's what he's prepared to do and to actually do it in the way that the shaman wants him to do it, which is great because you show respect for people and they will show it back to you.
Yeah.
So he is prepared to go down to Argentina, although the guy that he spoke to is not Argentinian. He was interested in answering his questions and showing him how to use these sebal seeds. And
I'll definitely keep an eye out for that. No, you're right about Viceland.
What is it, Monday nights,
Okay.
9:30, I think it was, or 10:30 on Viceland.
Definitely 31. Keep an eye out for that. Okay, that takes us out from this week's News from Drug War Front. Thanks for listening. Consider becoming
a
member.
We'll see you next week,
gang. We'll be back again next week, same time. Take care, everyone.
Yeah, do look after each other and look after yourselves, and we will talk to you next week.
We'll leave you with the theme song, Golden Brown.
Here we go.